and now Radio CJ, hosted by CJ Grace.
Some people are worth their weight in gold. You could say that my guest today is worth his weight in lead. In midlife, Lloyd Johnson made a massive change in his life to follow his passion for diving. Lloyd gave up his job as a college lecturer in San Diego to move to Maui with the aim of spending as much time as possible in the water. In 2012, he founded the snorkeling and scuba meetup group Maui Mantas, which grew to nearly 600 members before Lloyd converted it to a Facebook group. Lloyd is now a certified diving instructor as well as the leading light of the Maui Mantas Facebook group. So, Lloyd, thank you so much for coming in to talk to me today.
Thank you for having me.
So you regularly schedule all kinds of snorkeling events and dive events, but one of the more interesting ones are the Reef Angel dives to clean up the shoreline. And I think that's where the lead really comes in strong, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. We've collected hundreds of pounds, started by one of our members, Sean, I think it's pronounced Jezinarek. Something like that. He started it, and I'm continuing it while he's in Alaska.
So you collect lead, fishing lines, all kinds of stuff like that every week, is it? How frequently do you actually go out?
Nearly every week. There are a few weeks that we don't go because of conditions or because of other events that are coming too close. And frankly, I need a little rest in between some of these events.
So what other things have you found down there apart from the lead?
Well, it's mostly fishing tackle, but we found a few car parts. I once found a GoPro camera, which incidentally I did return to the owner because, darn it, he wrote his phone number on it.
And it was still working?
Yes, it was. And there were a great many photos on it. And when I had a look at those photos, I was really glad that I contacted him. They were in New York at the time, and the boy in the photographs was recovering from leukemia.
Wow.
So I suspect those were some very precious photos.
And so you found that camera and you sent the GoPro back to New York to the owners?
No, I called him and he actually lived on Maui. And so eventually he returned and I returned the camera to him and he gave me a modest reward for it and all was good.
You tend to think that electronics thrown down into the sea will not last that well. Have you found dead cell phones and stuff like that?
Not a cell phone, no. And the GoPro, of course, is sealed, and it had some growths on it, but all the data was intact.
And what do you do with all that lead you collect?
I melt it down, pour it into these one-pound weights, and distribute it to dive instructors.
And how many do you think you've made so far?
Well, hundreds. I mean, just recently I melted down 68 pounds, and just a few days ago another 63, and I've probably passed out at least 200 pounds prior to that. And that was just catching up because we'd collected a great deal of lead, and it's so cumbersome to melt it down.
You haven't thought about painting those bars gold and passing them off as bullion, have you?
You bet I have.
One of the great things about the Maui Mantas is that you do have novices come in, and you give them so much help. Sometimes you even have equipment to lend them, obviously not always, and you always give people advice and training, even though as a dive instructor, you could be running paid for courses to do that. You still help people out a lot. So what is your advice to brand new divers to actually learn how to feel comfortable in the water?
Well, find a dive that you're comfortable with and do it a few times and then do something where you're pushing the envelope, improving yourself, and you know, always be kind of on the edge there.
What's your most difficult customer in terms of somebody you've tried to teach diving? Are there some people who just don't get it, for instance?
There are. There have been a few people where I have had to say, you know what, this isn't for you. There really have been a few people.
What's been the problem? Has it been nerves or?
Typically that's it, anxiety. A lot of times people have trouble putting their face in the water. A lot of times they have people letting water into the mask. Because basically, scuba instruction is teaching you how to deal with little problems so that they don't become big problems. And one of those things is how to respond to a leaky mask. Okay, and so what we do in order to prepare you for that is we have you go underwater, let a little water in, and then blow it out. We have you take your mask off, put it back on, blow the water out, and continue. And a lot of people just don't like doing that. And, you know, if you can't do that, we can't certify you.
What are the stupidest things you can do when scuba diving? You must have seen plenty of those kinds of things going on.
Recently, I had a diver surface because she got a little water in her mask. And that's where she was risking decompression sickness. That was pretty stupid.
What about watching the air?
I have had a few people run out of air and lie to me later about it. By the way, I'm not diving with her anymore.
So you ask people to check their air frequently, and somebody wants to continue the dive longer than they should, and so they tell you they've got more air in their tank than they really have. Is that right?
I've had that happen, yes. Not the brightest thing to do.
But you also must have had some really sharp people who've got rid of problems in ways that you admire. I mean, have you had some admirable divers as well as divers who've been a bit silly?
Well, you bet I've had some admirable divers. I've had a few students who it was really just a matter of jumping through the hoops because everything they needed to do, they did it the first time. One of my students is an instructor now.
Now, you've been on Maui for some time. Have you seen a lot of changes in the reef? Because a lot of people are saying that global warming, coral bleaching, all these things are certainly changing the way the reef is.
Well, I think it was already damaged when I arrived. And I have seen some decline, but I think I would have had to have been here much earlier to really see the dramatic losses in reef quality.
So when you dive on Maui, do you find that from one year to the next, you do see less life? You do see the coral in a worse shape? Or are you not noticing those kinds of changes?
Well, I think now that you mention it, it is worse each year. But I can't say that I was paying close attention all this time.
I remember one snorkeling trip I did. I saw a frogfish. I think it was at one of the beaches near La Perouse, at the end of the south side of Maui. And normally those frogfish are pretty well camouflaged. They're bright yellow, but that merges with the bright yellow coral. But this frogfish was a really bright, vibrant yellow color, and the yellow coral around it was dulled, and more of it was covered with silt or algae growth or whatever. And it seemed to me as if the frogfish hadn't kept up with the deterioration of the reef in terms of its camouflage.
Well, that'll certainly be a problem for its survival if that's true, because those babies are going to be very vulnerable. But I've seen little frogfish in a variety of colors. I've seen the white, I've seen the yellow, I've seen reddish. I even saw one that was black. And I'd been following this frogfish for nearly a year, and I eventually started calling this one Blackie, because he was so jet black, and I had all kinds of trouble photographing him. And I'd see him for a few weeks in a row, and then I'd lose him for a few weeks. Finally, I found him, and he was not so black anymore, and I watched him turn brown and then a bright orange. And this took about 2 weeks for this color change to happen. But still, the young frogfish are typically the bright yellow. And so if they get eaten by predators when they're young, they're obviously not going to grow up and reproduce.
So the ones with the best camouflage are the ones that are going to survive.
Yeah, as far as I know, camouflage is the only defense they have.
Why did you actually come to Maui? You've got an interesting background. You were a college lecturer in astronomy, right?
That's right.
And you gave that up. You worked in California, and you gave it all up to come to Maui.
Yes.
What was the reason?
Warm, clear waters, especially Little Beach.
Oh, Little Beach. Little Beach is the nude beach on Maui, and you are an ardent naturist, right?
That's right. And I was mayor of Black's Beach, a nude beach in San Diego. That was 10 years I was mayor there.
So what is it about naturism out in the open beaches that really attracts you?
Well, it's just another freedom. It seems silly to me that we're covering up body parts like that.
And I suppose on a beach in Maui, you definitely don't need clothes to protect yourself from the cold.
No, there's a lot of people that worry about that. I've recorded a water temperature down to a bone-chilling 73 degrees.
And that's fine for going with no clothes in the water, on the beach, wherever you are.
Well, that was a night dive. Yeah. I was shivering at the end of it, but I warmed up pretty quickly afterwards.
You're not only a scuba diver, you're also a fairly accomplished free diver. I remember seeing a photograph of you once where you are actually, it must have been Little Beach, not wearing anything at all, but holding your brand new free diving fins in front of you. And they do a very good job of covering up any naughty bits, as they might say in Monty Python.
Yeah, that was a clever idea I got from a movie, Borat. They had the wrestling scene in that, and I decided that would be a good photo that I could still post places like Facebook and Meetup.com.
So you've done well over 1,000 dives in your scuba career. What has been the most scary moment ever diving?
That one that I did with your son was pretty scary. We did that night dive at McKenna Landing, and when we surfaced, it was pretty choppy. I was a little worried on that one, but I brought him back alive because you would have killed me otherwise.
That's true. I had stories about a squid attack when somebody was actually doing scuba.
Well, I wasn't there for that. That was one of my dive buddies in San Diego. That was Shanda McGill. She was diving La Jolla Canyon, and she was attacked by a squid and dragged down. And she got her 15 minutes of fame out of that. She was in the news for a while. But I wasn't present for that.
That was a giant squid that attacked the scuba gear.
It was a Humboldt squid, yeah. So, I don't know, those things are maybe 100 pounds or so. Big enough to be a threat, and quite vicious. They've been known to rip each other apart.
Do you think that the tubes of the scuba equipment were something that looked like another squid to it? That it was maybe trying to mate with it or fight with it?
No, I suspect it was simply trying to feed, and that looked like something that was about the right size.
So they aren't as sharp as the sharks that know to leave scuba people alone.
Well, based on Shanda's description, this could have gone the other way. So I think it was I think people are fair game for Humboldt squid.
Have you had any close encounters with dolphins and whales?
I have. I've swam with whales twice, and I've swam with dolphins a few times. The swimming with the whales and most of the swims with dolphins were snorkeling rather than scuba diving.
But you just came upon these creatures.
Yes.
And it must have been a pretty amazing experience to do that.
Yes, it was. Every attempt to describe it just pales in comparison. Such large, gentle creatures or such fast creatures, you know, in the case of the dolphins.
Let's talk more about the reef angels. What have you actually cleaned up so far? How do you decide which areas to go to, and what do you actually do when you're there underwater? What's the process?
Well, first off, we choose locations according to just how big of a mess they are. And on Maui, we've been primarily cleaning McGregor Point and Papawai Point. These are two places that are pretty inaccessible to everybody except fishermen. So if there's a lot of fishermen there and not many divers, there's going to be a lot of fishing tackle. So that's how we select them. But we have done reef cleanups at Black Rock and at Mala Wharf. We've done
those are on the Lahaina side.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And we recently did one at Red Hill. There are divers and there are snorkelers. Usually there's more snorkelers than divers. And the divers, of course, we go underwater and we pick it up and we put it in these bags that I've made out of old umbrellas.
And you've sewed them. You're a man who's not afraid to use a sewing machine, is that right?
Well, that's right. Actually, you're obviously quoting me from a website of mine or two. I have a sewing machine and I'm not afraid to use it. Well, I take apart umbrellas and use those pieces to make bags for cleanup or custom bags for some other purpose, like carrying fins. I make sure that I don't make them too big, otherwise we'd put too much lead in it and then it would rip.
It would rip, and maybe the people would get sucked down to the bottom by all the weight.
Well, it would rip, and we would lose the weights that we collected, and you know, just nothing good would come of that. So we go down, we collect so much, and eventually the bag gets too heavy, so you set that bag down someplace where you can find it, and you fill another bag, and then you fill another, and however many bags you manage to fill. And then eventually we attach it to a lift bag. I've got a 50-pound lift bag, and we'll send that up to the surface.
So now, it's like a pulley system, is it?
It's not a pulley system at all. Not at all. The lift bag is simply a bag that we fill with air, and then the buoyancy of that lift bag will take it up to the surface. Now, when it reaches the surface, of course, there are snorkelers that have been up there collecting fishing line as well, and they actually have a harder time of it because they're trying to collect all this in the surge, taking one breath, get down, see how much you can untangle it. So they actually have a harder task. And typically they don't collect anywhere near as much as the scuba divers collect. But they're essential because when we've got all this heavy gear on and now we're ready to get all our trash back to shore, they're the ones that wind up noticing that the lift bag has surfaced and then they tow it to the shore. And the exits at the two dive sites we go to most often are very challenging exits. So climbing out of that with your dive gear on, which, you know, could be 50 or 60 pounds in addition to your own weight, it's a challenge. And it's good to have the snorkelers there to lift the stuff out for us.
So this is advanced diving in a lot of circumstances.
The dive itself isn't advanced, but the exit sure is. And the hike's pretty intense because once you figure out where Papawai Point is, you realize that you've got quite a hike just to get down to the rocky shore. And then, of course, you got to hike up with all that dive gear.
What is the problem of having the fishing line down there and the lead weights down there? What problems can ensue from that?
Well, of course, the wildlife gets tangled in it. If we see an animal that's actually tangled in it, we're going to rescue that first. That's our first priority.
What kinds of rescues have you done so far?
Oh, I've cut a little bit of line off of a manta on one occasion. I've cut a little bit off of turtles on a few occasions. And that's really about it. Oh, nope. I found a puffer that was hooked, and I managed to free up that puffer. But mostly we're picking up these long fishing lines that are just all across the bottom to prevent any future entanglement.
I've seen turtles missing flippers and missing sections of the tail even. Is that from entanglement, that the flipper dies off from having a line around it as the animal grows? Is that what happens?
Is it because a tightening fishing line cuts off circulation? Could be. I think some of those are losses due to shark attacks.
So you have done all this work cleaning the reef with volunteers. The Maui mantas are volunteers, and they go out maybe as often as once a week, clearing out the reef, picking up the fishing line, picking up lead, and any other debris they find on the ocean floor. Have you thought about the future for that? Do you think there's any possibility of sponsorship by a company or somebody in the Hawaii government giving grants to help clean up the reef?
I suppose I should probably be looking into that. I could use the money. But frankly, I try to be discreet when I'm cleaning up, because when I've done other cleanups, just picking up trash on the beach, eventually I find that people walk up to me and give me their trash. And you know what? I don't want your trash. I want you to think that this is a very clean beach, and don't you dare leave a single piece of trash here. There should at least be the illusion that people pick up after themselves. So I really don't want to be visible when I'm cleaning up. There's some value to secrecy.
And what about sharks? A lot of people are worried about swimming with sharks when they're swimming in Maui. There was one shark death a few years back. A woman was killed just as a snorkeler. She didn't seem to be doing anything wrong. She just was found fairly close to the shoreline. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, of course, I see the white tip reef sharks all the time, and they're much smaller than us, so we can mess with them. And I have seen Galapagos sharks twice and a tiger shark once, and none of them give me any problems. And there was an article published a little bit after that fatality you're talking about, where they did a little statistics on shark attacks, and they had a pie chart showing what people were doing when they were attacked by sharks. And if you get a good look at that pie chart, it shows not one single shark attack on a scuba diver. Most common activity was surfing, and then following that was snorkeling and swimming. Typically, the surfers are out when the water's all churned up, and that's when the sharks make the mistake of attacking humans. While scuba divers typically go out when the conditions are nice and clear, and the sharks can notice, okay, that's not my usual food.
Is it just that the tanks and the air bubbles, the noisy air bubbles coming out of the scuba equipment, scare the shark off and make this creature down there look really unpalatable to them?
Well, that could be. I hear a lot of people saying that, but I'm not one to know that. And I wonder if the people that say they know it really do know it. Maybe they're just making up stories.
Have you ever heard of a scuba diver being attacked by a shark?
No, I haven't.
So maybe that's the safest way to go. Put on your scuba gear and get in the water.
Well, I would say so. You got to do a surface swim to get there, but no scuba diver's been attacked while on his way to the drop zone.
People make a lot of fuss about sharks, and sometimes it's just a shark that really isn't anything to be worried about. Sometimes it's even dolphins, and people see the fins and think it's a shark, and they're going to have to rush out of the water. I've seen that happen.
Yes, these people from the Midwest think they know more about sharks than we do.
So what kind of shark stories have you come across?
Well, my favorite one is from one of my members by the name of Carol. She's a French-Canadian, and she was very active our first year. And we were having a farewell snorkel for her.
She was going back to Canada.
Shortly after that. This was like our last snorkel with her. She's such a sweetheart. So we're swimming along and we're dropping. And I'm going down to look in the caves to see if we can find the white-tipped reef sharks. And I go into the first cave, no sharks. Go to the bubble cave, no sharks. We're just swimming along and no sharks, no sharks, no sharks. Getting kind of disappointed. Well, Carol got way ahead of us. And she went to what I now know is triple arches. And she goes down and she sees a shark. So she's ahead of me and she yells, Lloyd, shark, shark. So I swim over there as fast as I can. I dive down into triple arches. I find the shark. It's cool. Got a few photos of the shark. What I did not notice was all the tourists swimming back to the boat as fast as they could. You know, I was
terrified.
Swimming. Yeah, I was swimming toward the shark and they were swimming away. The two times I saw Galapagos sharks, I swam toward it. They swam away from me. I didn't get a decent picture of either of them.
But with Carol, that was just a reef shark, which is really not a problem at all. They're pretty docile. They aren't known to attack humans at all, right?
Correct. They're much smaller than us, in fact. Just a few days ago, I was diving the Carthaginian, and we saw...
What is the Carthaginian?
That's a sunken ship offshore from Lahaina. And it's a 0.6-mile swim out. I only have one buddy who's dumb enough to do that dive with me. And we found a white-tipped reef shark there that was only 2 foot or so in length. Very small shark.
But the Galapagos shark, is that dangerous or not?
That one's a man-eater.
Oh, so maybe the fact that you swam towards that rather than away from it might be seen to be a little risky?
Or even foolish.
Yes.
But, well, danger's my middle name. What can I say? But we know that these things don't swim toward us. They typically swim away from divers. When you look at them, we become a scary subject there.
You know, and you were diving at the time. You weren't snorkeling. You were in your dive gear underwater.
Correct. One of the times I sighted a Galapagos, I was at Black Rock, and the other time I was at Little Beach.
I remember a story from somebody who was doing stand-up paddleboarding, and they said that as they were paddling through, they saw a tiger shark go underneath them, and the shoulders were so wide of the shark that they were out on either side of the board. And it was a pretty scary experience. They took the paddle and they just waited for the shark to swim away from the paddleboard.
Well, I wasn't there for that one, but my sighting of a tiger shark, I was swimming from Little Beach toward Black Sand Beach, and I was snorkeling. I wasn't out scuba diving this time, and we kind of passed each other, ships in the night sort of thing.
But it was the day.
It was daytime, yes, yes. But we passed each other, and we each kept going, And I'll tell you, it was kind of a scary swim back to Little Beach, and I couldn't go to Black Sand because I'd left my pants on Little Beach.
Oh, you were not wearing any clothing, so...
That's not true. I was wearing fins, gloves, and a mask.
Well, it's good to know that you were decently covered there.
Yeah.
So, Lloyd, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
And if you're visiting Maui or you're lucky enough to live there, you should check out Lloyd's Maui Mantis Group. There are always a lot of activities going on. And if you are a good diver or even a hefty snorkeler with good muscles, you should go on the Reef Angels dives and help to clean up Maui's coastline. And what have you got to say to that, Lloyd?
And otherwise, it's a good way to improve your dive skills, right? I mean, I am an instructor, so I can teach you diving. But oftentimes we have novices join our group, and there's always going to be room for novices in our club.
And the Maui Mantas is a Facebook group, isn't it, Lloyd?
Yeah, yeah. We're not so snooty that you have to have 100 dives under your belt before you can join us.
Great. Okay, well, I think that's it. Thank you again for coming on Radio CJ.
Thank you for having me.
Radio CJ was presented and produced by CJ Grace. Thank you for listening.